Right now, the term flyover country has been used as a kind of put down to describe the middle section of the United States that lies between the East and the West Coast. And that, of course, includes the Midwest and Wisconsin.
The idea that the Badger State is part of a stretch of landscape that can be skipped over at high altitude is not only a slight to most Wisconsinites. Our next guest says it's proving to be untrue.
Our guest says Wisconsin is home to a lot of cool places and things to do that make the state a premier tourism destination. Stephanie Klett is with us. She's Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism. Stephanie, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, Veronica and Rob, it's great to be here. And I was going crazy over your cheese segment because as the Limburger queen for the last 2 years for Greene County, I'm like, no, Limburger.
Oh, Limburger. A vote for Limburger. Right. Yes. So cheese is obviously one thing to celebrate in Wisconsin. And, you know, those people who say that the Midwest and Wisconsin are flyover, it's flyover country. What are they missing, Stephanie?
Well, you know what? That is a phrase that started many, many years ago. And it was interesting because as that phrase was becoming prevalent at that time, Chicago O'Hare, which, of course, would be included as flyover country, was the busiest airport in the world. And so it really was almost a coin of arrogance for people as media markets really grew and just took off. In fact, media capital of the world, New York, and of course Los Angeles being the entertainment capital of the world. And that phrase stuck because, you know, if you don't brand yourself, other people will brand you. And so what we made sure is that we really target our West Coast and East Coast. Even on a limited budget, we go after them in social and digital media. And that phrase is becoming a thing of the past, I am happy to say.
So how are we selling Wisconsin? What is it that's going to appeal to those people who used to fly over that's going to get them to stop here?
Well, you know what? It doesn't matter how sophisticated you are. People love world-class events. They love action and they love beauty. And so we are really promoting our assets that, you know, Wisconsin, the word Wisconsin is a Native American word meaning gathering of the waters. And we have over 15,000 lakes. And a lot of times when you think lakes, of course, how Minnesota was branded, you go, oh, 10,000 lakes. We have 15,000, and we have thousands of miles of streams. We have Superior, you know, the greatest of the Great Lakes at the top, Lake Michigan to our east, the Mississippi to the right. And so what we've been doing at the Department of Tourism is bringing in travel writers from around the world. And when they fly in, it's usually to Milwaukee, they're stunned at seeing Lake Michigan. A lot of them don't realize that it's a mini ocean, and you put that in next to Lake Superior and look out because that's really an ocean. And so we brought in the United States Travel Association, which is the premier travel organization, I would say, in the world. We brought their board of directors just a couple years ago, flew them into Milwaukee. They had their meeting in Kohler. They were so blown away what we heard over and over from the person who, you know, literally spearheaded what stays in Vegas, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, to Los Angeles, New York, Miami. They said, you know, we're water people, we're ocean people, and we didn't realize what you have here are really oceans. They were also struck by the amount of steeples and churches that they saw. And then, of course, when they were in Kohler with world-class golf and this amazing spa, there wasn't a single one of them that left who didn't say, I'll be back.
Oh,
and
wow.
So we're really starting with the folks in travel to get them educated about it because those are the folks that talk the most.
Right. I mean, to talk about the Great Lakes, you know, they are, like you said, they're inland seas.
No sharks either.
No sharks. There's some bonuses there on the waters a little. A little chilly from time to time, depending on the time of year. But kayaking along the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore, that's got to be at the top of a lot of lists, right, Stephanie?
Well, you know, it's a bucket list. Kind of like a lot of folks in America, they want to see the Eiffel Tower or do, you know, Oktoberfest in Munich. For a lot of folks around the world, especially our Australian friends and our German friends, they want to kayak the Apostle Island sea caves. And, of course, when they froze over, that got Wisconsin such international attraction that we couldn't pay for. It went wild in a matter of 24 hours on social media and was in virtually every country knowledge of these caves that froze over. But kayaking is a big deal. Silent sports, grow every year, especially if your demographic is getting older. It's a sport that any age can do. You can be adventurous, you can be smooth and calm. So, yes, Apostle Islands and, you know, Milwaukee, Summerfest, you know, it's the world's largest music festival. And again, we throw out the world's largest a lot, but it's true. Nothing comes close to it. And so people are really taking notice of Wisconsin in a way that they haven't in years. And social media has been a good friend to that.
We're talking about Wisconsin's unique attractions right now with Stephanie Klett, the Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism.
We'll hear more suggestions from her, and we'd like to hear from you. What place in Wisconsin is special to you? What kind of attractions, natural areas, you name it, would you recommend to someone who has only ever flown over our state? Where do you take out-of-state visitors? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. 1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're exploring Wisconsin as a unique travel destination, and we want to hear what hidden gems you love in the Badger State. What special places do you recommend to first-time visitors to prove Wisconsin is more than flyover country? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Stephanie Klett is back with us. She's the Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism. And let's take a caller. We've got Tiffany with us in La Crosse. Tiffany, hi.
Hi. I guess I would recommend House on the Rock. It's about an hour south of La Crosse. It's built by Frank Lloyd Wright. He was a super famous architect. And it's filled with, I mean, you can name it, it's probably in there. It's got like a whole room of China dolls, a whole room of carousel horses, a functioning carousel that you unfortunately can't ride because it's an antique, but it's still very beautiful to look at. I think there was something like 10,000 light bulbs on it.
Right, and this is the House on the Rock is amazing. And I think you're thinking of Taliesin by Frank Lloyd Wright. I'm not sure who the architect is for House on the Rock. Stephanie?
That was Alex Johnson. But don't feel bad because he was greatly influenced by Frank Lloyd Wright. So a lot of people make that mistake. But it is home to the world's largest carousel, and there are like 100,000 lights on that bad boy. So I call it a visual encyclopedia. It is just crazy. It's really a place to be totally overstimulated. So that's a great recommendation.
That's an only in Wisconsin, Tiffany. Thank you so much. And speaking of Frank Lloyd Wright, Stephanie, that's one tourism suggestion following Wisconsin's Frank Lloyd Wright Trail. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. The Frank Lloyd Wright Heritage Trail passed through the legislature. So we're actually at the Department of Tourism working with the Department of Transportation and creating signage. So you can, you know, head over to Racine and the S.C. Johnson building and make your way through Madison and Monona Terrace to Richland Center, Spring Green, Taliesin. So that's underway right now. And it's just another way that Wisconsin internationally is absolutely renowned. I mean, we are home to who is considered one of the world's great architects. And when this trail is done, you know, you can see everything on it now, but it'll be an official trail that'll make it easier for guests from out of state and our international visitors to really experience the mind of this genius.
Stephanie, I want to ask you, it seems like over the years, different parts of the state get a spotlight. So the southeastern part of the state with Milwaukee has a lot going on, and northern Wisconsin has so much natural beauty. And then the area that Tiffany was just talking about, that sort of the Driftless area has got a lot going on that people are starting to be aware of. Which part of the state is next? What do you think is the next up-and-comer?
Well, you know, I like how you stated that because it really does rotate. But right now, I would say Northwest Wisconsin is really coming into its own. One thing, they have some great state parks. You know, the largest waterfall in Wisconsin is in Douglas County, just south of Superior, Big Manitou Falls. And waterfall tours are really catching on. Wisconsin's waterfall capital of the Midwest. And so a lot of folks are doing waterfall tours. The other thing is that the Minneapolis market is really starting to buy second homes in Wisconsin. And they choose to stay within a couple hours of their home area. And so Northwest Wisconsin is ideal, and it is growing because of that. So, you know, whether it's Hudson and Willow State Park, whether it's Interstate Park, our oldest state park in Wisconsin, over 103 years old, that's, I think, the up-and-coming area is the Northwest part.
Let's get to another caller now. We've got Jerry on the line in Wausau. Jerry, hi.
Hi. I have two, actually, from up here in the Wass area, and that would be the Eau Claire Dells, which is fantastic for camping and hiking. It's actually part of the Ice Age Trail.
Gorgeous.
And then the also is the Wausau Whitewater Park. It's actually part of the Wisconsin River, and they divert the water and have a great Wausau. It's a whitewater park for kayaking and canoeing, and they hold the championships here, Midwest championships and things like that.
Wow. Jerry, thank you so much.
And I want to add with Jerry, he is right on with both those recommendations. But yesterday, or 2 days ago, I was filming in Wausau, Granite Peak Ski Area, which is the largest in the Midwest. It has 75 runs, but in the fall, for 3 weekends in a row, they let you take the Comet Sky Ride up to the top of the mountain and view fall colors, and it is stunning.
Wow.
I've never heard of that. So fall colors, another thing, which is, at least in the South, it's a little slow getting going because we've had such warm weather. But Stephanie, where do you advise people go if they want to check out maybe a new and unusual fall foliage area?
Well, TravelWisconsin.com has a fall color report that is updated daily. So right now, the north is gearing towards peak. So I'm off to Lacouture tomorrow, and they're at about 90% color, and the Hayward area. Wausau is over 50%. So this is the time when you really got to watch, and that fall color report is a great guide because it updates county by county where they are in the transition so you don't miss it.
Jerry, thanks for the call. Time for one more quick call with Eugene in Viola. Hi, Eugene.
Well, good afternoon. The Kickapoo Battle Reserve is just 7 miles north of us. It's 8,200 acres. And they just got done doing their fall marathon where you had to ride a bicycle, run or walk, and also paddle a canoe. And they had over 400 people involved in that situation. That is beautiful for camping in the summertime.
Kickapoo Valley Reserve. Thank you, Eugene. Stephanie, just about out of time. You want to leave us with maybe a hidden gem?
Well, here's the hidden gem. And it's not somewhere, a place to visit, but it's with Wisconsin Public Radio. And I know you guys are sincere, but you too, Central Time, is awesome, and you've done a great job. And what I love is that one minute you're talking about cheese, and the next minute you're talking about politics, and how great it is to have Wisconsin Public Radio, where creativity and innovation is really embraced, and that you can have a real conversation. So during our break, I made my donation for Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm excited about
you.
The match, but thank you for all you do, because whether it's Renica and Rob or Joy or Larry Mueller, I mean, we feel like we know you, that you're part of our extended family. So thanks for what you do.
Oh, we appreciate that. I think Rob's
Thank
a little
you.
Misty-eyed
Aww.
Over there, Stephanie.
Yeah.
I am too. Wow, we didn't expect that. We appreciate that, though. We always love having you on. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It's the truth.
That's Stephanie Klett, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism. And remember, you can pledge your support for the great conversations, the uniquely Wisconsin conversations here on the Ideas Network. Do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Parents around the country staged what they called walk-in protests today at schools in order to demand higher quality education services for children, especially Black and Latino students. Here in Wisconsin, nearly 20 schools were picketed statewide in La Crosse, Tomahawk, and Milwaukee, with parents calling on lawmakers to change school requirements and neighborhood school privatization and more.
The protests were coordinated by the Alliance to Reclaim Our Schools. Joining us now to talk about these walk-in protests in Wisconsin is John Havlicek. He's president of the La Crosse Education Association and WEAC Region 4, Cooley Region United Educators, which helped coordinate the protests in La Crosse. John, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Before we get into the goals of the protest, what is a walk-in protest? I've heard of a walk-out.
Yeah, you know, we didn't want to disrupt the learning, right, of the kids. So what we did was we met about 20 or 30 minutes before our contract starts, you know, our school time, and we had a short rally and a couple of cheers, and we invited community members and civic leaders and so forth, and then we walked into the school in solidarity.
We'll get into some of the specific issues, but big picture, what was the goal of this protest?
We were trying to raise awareness about what is going on in educational policy at the state level and at the federal level, or not so much at the federal level, but at the state level across the country. There's a real defunding of public education, and it disproportionately affects students in our black and brown communities, and it disproportionately affects the very kids who need the most support. And we were trying to raise awareness.
Part of your concern is money going away from public schools into things like voucher schools, alternatives to public schools. People who support those say, well, the reason we're doing those is to try to help the same students that you're talking about, giving them alternatives to public schools that may not be meeting their needs in some places. What would you say to that?
You know, I would say that's kind of a red herring. You know, the kids that need the most support are the kids that are least likely to be accepted or to continue, if they are accepted, in these private charter schools or voucher-accepting schools. If you look at the data across the country, those schools are some of the most segregated schools in the country. And there are a lot of leading educational experts that say that, taken as a whole, our educational system is approaching the segregation levels that we saw prior to Brown v. Board of Education in 1954. So I would say that that's a real red herring.
Now, one of the goals in the announcements of these protests was to have students have access to good education. I think the phrase regardless of zip code came up.
Yeah.
What kind of things are you talking about? Where disparities based on where a student lives?
Oh, absolutely. Like what's been happening in Wisconsin, as there's been a decrease in state funding from the general fund to the local schools, the school districts have to make it up with local funding. So then what that creates is that creates the haves and the have-nots. You know, in La Crosse, in the last 20 years, we're kind of rebounding, but we've seen some economic hardships. When Train Company left a number of years ago, and G. Holland Brewing, and La Crosse Rubber Mills, those were really good jobs. And so we've seen some economic depression. So then that affects the schools. And thankfully, in La Crosse, we have, like, super supportive community. But you look at the number of referendum questions that pass every year, because the locals understand that they need to support their local schools, and some of them can and some of them can't. So that really creates a real disparity, and that's something we were trying to raise awareness of as well.
Yeah, here in Wisconsin, we have a fairly complicated formula of how schools are paid for and how state money is apportioned to school districts. Are you hoping for a fundamental revisiting of how we do that?
You know, that would be a real pie in the sky, but absolutely. You know, what we really need to do is we need to ensure that every school is able to provide the services that their kids need. Because we have kids that just flat out need more support than other kids. And with these vouchers and the private charters, and as we're draining money out of the system, those kids get left behind. And so then the very kids that need the most sometimes end up getting the least support. And that's as wrong as it gets. And so, yeah, we're hoping to fix that.
We're talking to John Havlicek. He's with the La Crosse Education Association and WEAC Region 4, Cooley Region United Educators, talking about walk-in protests this morning at some schools and communities around the state, calling attention to concerns about public school funding and more. And John, outside of funding, another item on the agenda for protesters in Wisconsin and elsewhere is testing, the concern that we're doing too much standardized testing of students, cutting into education time and changing how kids are educated. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, all the research for the last 30 or 40 years across the world shows that students' standardized test scores correlate most closely with parent economic status. They don't really tell us much about what the student has learned, because the tests are written to be so general that they don't really address what goes on in an individual school or in a classroom. Parents, when they want to know, you know, how much, in my case, Spanish is my child learning, or how much math is my kid learning, they call the teacher. and they say, hey, you know, what's going on in Spanish class? And then we talk about it. How much math, you know, is my son or daughter learning? They talk to the math teacher. They don't care about those nationalized tests. Really what those are is those are a kind of a boondoggle for the testing companies, and there's something that is promoted very heavily because we live in a society that really loves to kind of rank and compare numbers and stuff like that, even if they're not really terribly valid numbers. So, yeah, we need to get rid of that stuff. We need to really, really just take snapshots and rely on the experts who can really tell us, is this child learning at an appropriate pace? Where are this child's strengths and weaknesses? Where are this child's interests lie and so forth? And that expert is the classroom teacher.
To change any of these things you're talking about, it's going to take some kind of probably cooperation between teachers' unions like your own, parents' groups, school districts, the Department of Public Instruction, and the state legislature. It is not, I think I'm not understanding things, it's been a bit of a rocky relationship between a lot of those parties, going back to Act 10 in particular. Do you see room for common ground, for cooperation between all of those organizations?
Well, yeah, it's kind of funny. You know, there's good compromise and bad compromise. I would say, I think you listed five different groups there. I would say that four of us are on the same page and already and have been for the last 30 years. You see that with all these referenda that are being passed. You see that with the different school boards and so forth that are taking official positions. There are some people that try to demonize teachers' unions. And yet, when you talk to community members, parents who have kids in schools across the country, it's something like a 90% approval rating for their kids' school. Then when we talk about it in the abstract, that goes down a little bit. And that disconnect is really linked to certain groups across the country that are just kind of have an ideological interest in things and are really not acting in the best interest of the children, which is unfortunate.
So you don't see a lot of room for cooperation as things stand with the Republican-led legislature?
Well, you know, I'm not so concerned with party politics, the Democrats and the Republicans and so forth. I just want the legislature and the governor and so forth to understand that kids need the support to succeed. And what that means is the schools have to be funded appropriately. You know, I've got kids in lacrosse that they don't have real stable, positive adult relationships. They move from home to home. Sometimes they're not living with either parent, and they really struggle. And those problems then surface in the classroom. And the adults that work with those kids sometimes are the only smile those kids see, the only compliment and encouragement that those kids hear in a day. And we have to have the funding to be able to put those adults in the classroom.
So you had the walk-in protest this morning. What's next as you try to advance this message?
Well, we'd really love to have concerned citizens, community members, parents, teachers, you name it, across the state, contact their legislators. Give them a quick phone call. I'm sure Alberta Darling and Dale Kuyenga, and I think it's Mr. Thiessen, who are talking about some of these takeover schemes and voucher schemes and privatization things, I'm sure they'd love to hear from constituents around the state.
We'll leave it there. John, thanks for joining us today.
Well, I really appreciate you having me.
That's John Havlicek. He joined us to talk about walk-in protests this morning at schools around Wisconsin and at schools around the country, challenging states to provide better education opportunities and support to students. He's the president of the La Crosse Education Association and WEAC Region 4 Cooley Region United Educators.